Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, sports fans, Coach Nick here, and welcome to the B-Ball Breakdown live show coming at you right after the Lakers versus the Nuggets. What a game, what a game. I cannot wait to chop it up with my co-host tonight, Andrew Combo Salop, who's always with me. Andrew Combo, how's it going, my man?
It's going well. What a game, man. What a game. I couldn't have said it any better. What a game.
Thank God it was a game. I was worried that we were going to have a 30-point blowout. It would be a sweep, and that would be it. It make me look really foolish as far as when I was talking on Twitter the other day about how this is, you know, could be one of LeBron's best teams he's been on. But we have a lot to talk about. We have to pull apart some things and figure out what went wrong, what went right, and where we go from here. So give me your first impressions. What do you think – let's see here. If you were the Nuggets, what would you be looking at right now?
Well, I actually want to start with the Lakers' defense in the first half because it was absolutely atrocious. I mean, they didn't even get back in transition. They were going under on Jamal Murray, pick and rolls and handoffs. And it just seemed like the effort wasn't there. It didn't even seem like they were in a playoff game, like they were in some meaningless regular season game. They turned it up second half. And I think that, you know, if the Nuggets don't hit some really tough shots, like these weren't regular tough shots that the Nuggets were hitting. These were like abnormally tough shots. When we talk about Jokic from almost, I don't know, what was like right inside the half court line, it felt like. And then Jamal Murray hit a ridiculous shot on LeBron and that thumbs up meme is about to go crazy. And then Michael Porter Jr., it was a little bit less of a tough shot in the corner with that step back, but that was a really tough shot too. So if Denver misses some of those, this could have been a different outcome.
I agree. And it's funny that you've been hanging around with me too long because atrocious is exactly the word I was thinking of to talk about their defense. And primarily you know, it's funny. Dennis Schroeder is the guy. So I was trying to think about this as far as the defense goes. So the mistake I think that Darvinham made was not to look at the matchups before game one started. I think that they liked what they saw against the Warriors. They had changed the lineup to get to go smaller and have Reeves, Schroeder, and D'Lo in there together. But they didn't look at how that would match up, which matched up terribly. So to have Austin Reeves trying to close out on Michael Porter Jr. is no matter how hard he tries, and he tried, he's not going to affect that at all. And he must have hit two or three threes, just, you know, just catch and shoot, didn't even bother him. And Dennis Schroeder is probably, I would bench him first, only because he was trying to blame so many people for every time he got scored on and it was his issue that, and we've seen this before, he hasn't always been a really great teammate. And this, maybe it's the pressure. I don't know what was going on, but he was dragging people down. He was a buzzkill without question. And he was slow to react on navigating those screens. And they would score and he'd throw up his hands at least five or six times. I saw it tonight and looking around like someone else, you know, what's wrong with you or something. So that was really concerning to me, especially if he's not really going to, you know, light it up from the offensive end. I think this also comes down to LeBron. LeBron was way too quiet. I think at one point he was 22 points, 9 for 13 shooting somewhere in the fourth. And I was like, it was the quietest 22 points on really high efficiency I've seen. I couldn't feeling of like him scoring at all. It wasn't impacting the game. So that's how that whole thing opened up. And it felt like they were just going to build a 30-point lead and that was it. But one thing I keep telling everybody, and we know I keep saying on this show, is that these Lakers are resilient and they're tough. Nothing will bother them. They won't give up. You know, if anything they learn from the Warriors, it's, you know, and they remember the Warriors blew them out twice and threatened to blow them out another time in another game. So they're going to hold tight, independent of Schroeder, you know, being a bad teammate. They're going to stay the course. They're going to keep together. And now it's really going to be up to Ham to figure out some better lineups. And if he can do that, then this series will go, you know, a lot of games.
How would you change up the lineups if you were him? And I absolutely also agree with you with the LeBron point. Like, I was surprised when I looked at his stats. Like, his stat line actually looks really good, but he did seem quiet.
Yeah, 9 for 16, ultimately to 26 points, minus 6, whatever. You know, I the thing with Reeves is, like, he can't be on MPJ.
Did you see the way he closed out on him once? It was pretty good. Like, he threw like four hands on him, even though he only has two. Like, he went high, low, back high, and then but my MPJ still knocked it down.
Yeah. So I would bench Schroeder. You got to get – here's a question is, do you want Rui or Vanderbilt in there? By the way, but D'Angelo Russell, this is not going to be his series. Let me look at what he did on offense. 4 for 11, 8 points. You know, he hit a couple of shots almost like when they needed to and kind of helped them get the ship going a little bit in the third. But this is not going to be for him. He continually gets beat. Even when they don't pass his man the ball, he is lost. They move way too well without the ball for the guys he has to guard. So I would probably bench Schroeder and I would bench D'Lo. I would let Reeves start and let him guard. You know, they have to get KCP under control. The guy in the beginning was going crazy. And I try to tweet. I don't know what's going on my Twitter. It wouldn't let me tweet it out. But, like, basically, if I see the Lakers double down on Anthony Davis or even, like, start to show and help on Anthony Davis from one pass away off the guy on the wing right in front of him, I'm going to lose my mind because they must have hit four threes that way.
You said the Lakers doubled down on Anthony Davis. You mean Jokic?
The Lakers. Oh, I mean they double down on Jokic. Sorry. Okay. If they do that one more time, I was going to lose my mind because, you know, KCP comes around. It's an easy catch and shoot. I think I did see somebody else hit at least one of those threes, and it was just driving me nuts because it's like, what are you? That's not where you can help from. It's the easiest. The easiest rule you should have. KCP ended up having 21 points, 9 for 17.
He was on fire at one point, though. He was on absolute fire. What do you think this game looks like if Lakers just say we're not going to ever double Jokic?
Ah, that's an interesting question. I still say D'Lo gets beat on those cuts, so they would still get some of that. But I think what you're saying is if you don't double Jokic, the cutters shouldn't be open very much. You stay home on your guys. Jokic would score. And by the way, Anthony Davis's defense was terrible too. He was slow to react. Didn't read well, didn't see the floor well defensively. And I wonder if that's going to change or not. And as a result, like he was getting beat badly, I thought, by Jokic. Even like, you know, Jokic had a catch and shoot three where he just sort of like, oh my God, I have to get over there. And like wasn't in position to be ready to move. Too many of the Lakers were all like that. I don't know what it was. And we hadn't seen that much against the Warriors. And I don't know if they thought, oh, we can relax a little bit because this Denver Nuggets team moves without the ball at least as much as the Warriors do. So perhaps they learn their lesson. They'll come back stronger that way. And then, you know, perhaps with that huge lead early, the Nuggets won't kind of let up a little bit because that whole last 12 minutes, I would say, they really kind of didn't go to the Jokic high post touch as much without they were letting sort of Murray run pick and roll. And then throw it to Jokic. I just felt like that didn't have the same flow maybe as just going right to him at the elbow and letting people cut around him, if that makes sense.
Yeah, they also started out the half with Eric Gordon bringing the ball down the court, which I'm not mad at it. I mean, I feel like Eric Gordon has a lot of fun playing with this team. Like, he can bring the ball up the court sometimes. When he moves without the ball, he's going to get it. But I don't know if that's ideal to start out your second half doing that. I don't know. I would probably put it in Jamal or Jokic's hands, but I'm sure they have their reasons.
Well, yeah, that's interesting because also they opened an interesting cross match. I tweeted it out. I'm forgetting now in the very beginning if my Twitter even works. The Nuggets, let's see, they had Reeves. Oh, no, I think that's what it was. It was Lakers had Reeves guarding Michael Porter Jr. Like, that was a very strange cross match. And then the other way it worked fine. Obviously, Aaron Gordon, like what I would have thought, you know, I didn't really want to go on record and make a big comment about who I thought was going to win. I needed to see a game first, kind of wrap my head around how this all works. And I was going to do even more research until Doc got fired today, which, by the way, stay tuned for that video. I ground it out for 10 hours trying to get it done before the game. But stay tuned for that. I'll probably just do it really quick tomorrow morning as quickly as I can and then get this game out, which we got to talk about, though, Combo. Also, if you have a question out there and you want to get it answered, the best way to do it is over on YouTube with the Super Chat. So if you want to do that, that's the best way. We'll put your question up on the screen. We'll answer it. We'll give you a lot of love. It'll be really great. It'll help us keep the lights on and keep the show going. Of which, I think we're going to do post-game shows as much as I can, almost every game if I can.
You know, I never want to see anybody get fired. You sound so ruthless grinding out this 10-hour Doc gets fired video.
I know. It was a rabbit hole. And, you know, listen, the Doc Rivers stuff has always kind of bothered me as far as, like, how good of a coach is he really?
I hear you. You're not the only one that says that. There's other people, you know, around the NBA that say that, you know. But, like, Harden and Embiid did not show up for this game. Like, that was the biggest reason they lost, in my opinion.
Okay. So that is certainly, you know, you put your, you know, your fate in the hands of your players, and they're the ones who're supposed to come through.
Right.
I was looking for a unique way of approaching this, because I'm sure everyone's going to do all the typical stuff, garbage. And I didn't want to do that. But I also wanted to figure out if I could show what bothered me a lot about his teams, they tend to melt down in very key moments. In a lot of sort of spectacular ways, like bad turnovers, terrible shots, just terrible defense, just complete, you know, lack of cohesion and sort of mental toughness. A lot of that, to me, sort of has to do with the fact that he constantly is carrying on the sidelines. I know in LA it was worse. Every call that went against them was, you know, an atrocity against humanity. He would be up and shouting whatever. And then you got guys like CP3 and Blake and DeAndre Jordan and all that whole Clippers team would feed off of that. And then they would lose their equilibrium. So I went through, here's what I decided to do. I said, all right, he's coached the most game sevens of any NBA coach. His record is
ever,
great.
Ever.
What?
Ever?
I think ever. Yeah. I think it's 11, I think. So I decided, let's go through the ones where he lost and analyze the moment when the game clearly shifted. Most of those losses are blowouts, and like we saw on Sunday. And so I kind of was able to sort of do a through line where I'm like, look, there's a theme here a little bit about, terrible turnovers and just sort of like, a lack of cohesion and just sort of falling apart. And, you know, they don't stay competitive until the end. So I'm going to put that together, and it's going to be really interesting to see. And I'm going to actually juxtapose them. So I'm not going to just stick with one game. I have like 9 of these games to go through unless I cut a couple. I'm not going to go through the whole game and show you 10 or 12 clips from each game. I'm going to show you like the turnovers across all of those games. And I'm going to show you the bad shots across those games in a row. You'll kind of get a sense of like how you can't really say it's just the players. You can't just say, oh, Embiid and those guys didn't show up. It's too consistent of a time in the most, you know, important games of those seasons where they continually just fall apart and make dumb mistakes and cannot execute. And you have to think that there's something related to the coaching.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
It's fair. It's fair. I mean, look, his track record speaks for itself with a lot of comeback losses. So I hear what you're saying. I do think there was a bunch of injuries during the course of his coaching career that probably attributes somewhat to what happened with him. But I can't totally deny like his firing. Like, he obviously didn't do a great job. But I would say, like, if there was like blame pie, I would have to, for that game seven alone, I would have to give it to Joel and James, and especially Joel. And then he throws his teammates under the bus after. So, I mean, that doesn't help.
I mean, listen, people want to defend Joel because there was more of the context of that thing. I get it all across. I understand both sides.
He did say I have to be better first, but he also said that it can't just be me and James playing out there.
Yeah. And that's true too. I might pull it apart. Because remember, Doc got into hot water when he basically had sort of called out Ben Simmons and wasn't quite eloquent enough with what he said. I got what he said, but it came out really bad. And then Simmons completely shut down at that point. That's the worst outcome you can imagine. James Harden last year was not very effusive about what happened in the huddles with the coaching. And then this year, again, you know, it was okay. I think he said, he's like, we're fine or something like that. But like, you know, you normally the correct answer would be like, oh no, we're on the same page. And I really did I respect him and I can't wait to get back next year. Yada, yada. That didn't happen. And clearly Ramona Shelburne had reported that there was an issue where maybe James Harden was probably said something like, I don't want to play for the Sixers if he's still there. You know, so it's a thing. And it's, remember, In Boston, he was pretty much going to get fired. Like, it somehow he hung out long enough until they got the KG and the Ray Allen trades to go through. And that sort of changed his fortunes. If he hadn't won that one title, I really wonder where we would be now. And I think that, you know, we saw enough of these issues even with the Clippers. And again, you're right. The injury issue is a thing. And a lot of coaches have been able to sort of survive because of that. I thought maybe Budenholzer was going to survive because of that this year too, because of the Giannis injury. But as we're learning, I think there's a lot to go. That there's a lot behind the scenes. All I could tell you as far as Embiid goes, I'd be surprised if they didn't go to Embiid and ask him. And I can tell you this: if Embiid said, "I'm not playing for you guys if he's not here next year," then he would be fired.
Of course, and it's the same thing with Bud and Giannis. It's the same thing.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I imagine they went to him.
Coach Nick, but you mentioned James Harden wanting to get out of Philly. I don't know if he said it or not. You said somebody reported this. If Doc is there, he doesn't want to play. I don't know how true that is. But look, he forced his way out of Houston. He forced his way out of the Nets. He's about to force his way out with the Sixers. Like, sometimes you got to look in the mirror.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I mean, listen, that list of people who tend to get their coaches fired somehow is it's not that long, but we all know who. And I think somebody on Twitter asked about it today. Who was it? And they asked for the list. I saw it. And it was funny because I was wondering. I mean, I the first name that popped up in my brain wasn't the first person who popped up on in a lot of those replies. But at any rate, we have some super chats to get to. Very exciting.
Let's get it.
The problem is I got to find it in this scroll after I hit the wrong way. I went up the wrong way. All right, let me get in. I know we have two, but where are they? Oh, my goodness gracious. We have so many comments that it's like kind of going crazy. I can do this one. Let me see if I can do this. Huh. I can see it up on the top, but why won't it let me put it on the screen? All right. Well, here's one. Here it is. Okay. First of all, best friend of the breakdown, Bron. Thank you. Thank you so much. You're always there for us. Always so generous. Really appreciate it. Hey, Coach, MPJ's shot is really aesthetically pleasing to the eye. Curious to know what you think about it. Okay. I would disagree with that. I don't think it's that pleasing to the eye because it's a two-motion shot and he hangs in the air a little bit. But he does have a very aggressive dip, and I feel like that is what sort of syncs it up as well as he can. And he shoots a bit like the KD thing to me, and higher release point. But I will say out of the hand, it is pretty. And he certainly can stroke it when that goes in. What would you say?
Yeah. When we're doing things like this, shouts to Bron, always appreciate you. I would love to see it on the screen while I'm breaking it down. You know, I envision it. Unless it comes up in the back screen right here. But he gets it. I mean, the most important thing is he gets his shot off effortlessly. He could get it off the dribble. He could get it off the catch, like catch and shoot, and he could get it off curl. So, I mean, he gets his shot off pretty effortlessly. And he's very efficient. And he was very efficient all season this year in the regular season.
Yeah. So, it's like, you know, that's the only thing I have an issue with is that he hangs in the air a little bit. And then that worries me sometimes about getting your calibration off, but it has not affected him. The only thing that affects him is perhaps his back. If it ever flares up. Other than that, I mean, he looks really good out there now. And again, I told you this, it's unfair to have him as a third scorer for them or the third best player in the offense, because you know, invariably if a play breaks down between the first two guys, most teams they'll throw it to the third guy and, like, you know, hope for the best. And maybe it'll get if it's open, they'll get a shot or whatever. But here's a guy that could score all three levels and could do that, I think, as a number two or number one on other teams if it's purely we're talking about offense. So it's an embarrassment of riches for the Nuggets to have. And if we look at the box score, he ended up, you know, he's 6 for 12, 15 points, a plus 20 on the plus minus, by the way, a team high, you know, because not even KCP was plus 16 and Jokic was plus 11. Part of the reason is Jokic played way more minutes, which is interesting. Yeah. I found that they were actually doing a great job with him to get him a little extra rest. It felt like when they had that bigger lead, but it turns out they didn't, because 42 minutes is probably the maximum you play him.
Yeah, he played a lot of minutes. He was phenomenal in this game, and AD was as well, but I think Jokic got the nod. Obviously, I think Jokic's first half was a little bit better than his second half, but just phenomenal nonetheless.
Yeah. Okay, we have another super chat from Knicks. The streets are buzzing. Thank you. Thank you. Really, really generous. Thank you so much. Thoughts on Julius Randle's quote after game four? Maybe they just wanted it more. We saw Mike Brown in the Kings-Warriors series say that to his team in a huddle in a game seven, I think it was. They want it more than us. When they're getting more rebounds. I think it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. I think if you say that to your team, then it becomes like, okay, then they will ultimately want it more, and then they will get it more. I don't know. Did you feel like the Knicks didn't come to play and they weren't aggressive and they weren't trying as hard as they could?
I think sometimes Julius Randle gets emotional, and when he loses, he says things he doesn't want to say, or he doesn't talk at all to the media. I think that's just how Julius Randle is. I will say, I don't want to speak for all Knicks fans, it doesn't seem like they're very happy with Julius at this point in time.
Yeah. As soon as he started doing really well in the 1 year, whenever it was, 3 years ago, and they went on that run.
It was the year after the bubble where there was no fans in the stands. And this year too, to be honest.
Yeah. But it was the first year I said they should trade him now, because he will hold them back ultimately. And I feel like that's what we keep learning. And in fact, that's what it was. He had a good run that year. They won like 10 in a row or something, like in the middle of the season. And that put them a lot higher than they probably thought they were going to be. They had a higher seed maybe in the first round, and they lost. And he was terrible in that playoffs. And it was like, and he was terrible in a terrible way, like ISO wing and long twos. And this, like, you know, he wasn't that guy.
That was when Trae Young took their heart, right?
Yeah. I think that was the year. And so, and by the way, speaking of which, watching the game seven Hawks, Philly, Sixers, when Trae Young, you know, beat them in seven games, which I focus on my video for tomorrow. I think that here's why they blew it, is because I don't think that Randle has a lot of value. I think when he did have a lot of value, they needed to trade him then, and they just weren't willing to do that. And I think that's unfortunate. And they would have probably taken a lot of crap at the time, but they would have been much smarter to do that. I think anybody, you know, could see that. And so here we are. And I don't know if they're going to be able to move him, right? And I don't think his contract's probably pretty bad, isn't it?
Yeah, it probably is pretty bad, but there got to be a market for an all-NBA guy, right?
I don't know. Especially because a guy who kind of like, you know, he isn't the happiest teammate. I'm looking for his, God darn it, more. Where's my, oh my goodness. Why does this look so different now in B-ball ref? Let me go down to the contract.
That's what's interesting about Warriors. That's what's interesting, Coach Nick, about the Warriors with Poole. How are they going to move Poole? Because everybody's saying move Poole. He has a crazy contract.
Yeah. I mean, right, because people might think, well, there's a change of scenery could do him good, but that's not a kind of contract that you'd take a gamble on as a change of scenery. Right. Jordan Poole has to be a little bit concerned and careful. You know, it was funny because to me, it felt like his development completely stopped this year. Although then I was looking at it, and I think Clay went down, Curry went down. I was reading something where they, you know, he had some kind of big games and he did sort of fill those shoes well. I don't really remember. My take on it was he was sort of all year long a little bit off. And so watch, if you look at his numbers, they're all like amazingly better than they had been. By the way, Julius Randle is making 25.6 next year, 27.5, and then it tops off at 29 for the next 3 years. That's a lot of money. Either way, at some point toward the end of the year, Jordan Poole was broken. He was a broken player. I'm looking at the games log right now. You know, his minutes had been cut the last several games of the regular season, and then he never really could get on track at all. And I feel like he was going, you know, all the issues, he's going too fast, making terrible decisions. And when he finally tried to slow it down the last few games, I thought it was better, but then he was completely ineffective. He just wasn't himself. He was sort of a neutered version of what he could have been. If he can't get back on track, though, I don't know what his future in the league is going to be in a couple of years. I swear, because that was as troubling and frustrating as I'd seen a player get to in those playoffs.
Well, he was a G League guy. He got a huge contract, and if he's out the league, I'm not sure this is what he wants. He made a lot of money.
Absolutely. And you know what? He can turn it around. Look how skilled he was at 21. Yeah. And it's not even like he's got to develop more skill at 23, whatever he's going to be. He just needs to learn the game better now and learn how to just sort of be able to slow down and play at a different pace. And you should be able to do that. And he's young enough to be able to master that. And I think Curry said that. He goes, he's the key. Right. And I think they were hoping he'd be the key this year to carry guys like Clay, who, you know, could not make a basket after the 30 points in game two, I think it was. So, yeah, but let's put a button on the Julius Randle thing. I could see how Julius would become sort of upset and brooding and just sort of not and maybe not give out his all. We've seen that happen in the past when things bother him. And I also would say that like a guy like Tibbs is probably not the coach for him either. I think that Randle would probably feed off of the low energy, negative energy that comes out of Tibbs, while other players, you know, can use that as fuel. I don't think that Randle does. And so I would imagine, a different coach could probably reach him and keep him on a more positive keel. And then it should yield better results.
Yeah, I feel like coaches like Tibbs and Bud and Doc, they're somewhat rigid, you know, and there's a rigidness to the way they coach.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the issue with them. Obviously they have some pros, but there's a lot of cons when it comes to them as well. And the biggest one to me is just their rigidness.
For sure. All right. We got some more super chats. My goodness. Thank you. I wasn't even sure, but here we see them. We have to celebrate the first super chat from somebody coming up. Martin Jose, thank you. Thank you, Martin. Always great to see you here. Thoughts on the NBA draft lottery? The NBA draft lottery.
The Spurs got the Wemby. They won the Wemby sweepstakes. So shouts to them. It kind of makes sense. Like, they always got these great number one picks, right? So,
yeah. Is that why Popovich stayed?
I don't know why, but
here's the thing. Well, real quick, if Popovich had stayed because he knew it's a conspiracy that they already had number one pick to get Wembanyama, here's my take on him. He's going to be a generational player. Yes. I just don't think he's going to turn them around next year.
Oh, no, not in 1 year. No, I don't think so. Yeah. But I mean, maybe Pop got 5 years left.
Wow. Okay. Well, we'll see.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm curious to see how he's going to be able to do that because, you know, Pop is, you know, let's see. Is Pop that guy who's like going to be able to let this guy play like a guard?
Well, maybe not, but maybe they feel like they want to keep him around one more year to teach the young fella.
Yeah. Yeah, but then he could have just stepped down and been an assistant or been an advisor or whatever.
Assistant? You know? Come on, Pop, an assistant? He's not.
Yeah, or you know, what's it called?
A special advisor, like how Nash was for the Warriors, something like that.
Yeah. So, you know, something like that. But, okay, we'll see. I don't know. I feel like I'm down on Pop these days, but I don't know. But anyway, so my thoughts. So Wembanyama going to the Spurs. That's a very needed jolt to them. They haven't been good for a while. And this should begin that process. We'll see. And I think he's going to be terrific. Now, I was so knee deep in the Doc Rivers story that I barely had a chance to even look at the rest of the thing.
Charlotte Hornets. I like Brandon Miller for them. I think, you know, a lot of people might want Scoop, but they already got LaMelo at the point guard, you know, position. So I think, and in my opinion, Brandon Miller is, I would take him number two for most teams. I know that's probably not most people's take. The Portland Trailblazers could get Brandon, could take Scoot. The Rockets are going to be interesting. You know, they could get one of the Thompson twins, maybe.
Yeah.
The Pistons need shooting. So you find somebody there. I don't know. Yeah, it's going to be, the Magic need shooting, I should say. So we'll see what develops.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to even dive into any of the prospects, so I'm going to defer to you on the analysis for all of that. But at the very least, this is a good list. I feel like this is sort of, you know, in order of need, a pretty good way of fulfilling that for these teams for the most part. And I hopefully that some of these guys will start to get back to being some winning teams and you know, avoid trying to get into the lottery because you know, we want to see everybody try and do well. And obviously the NBA does too, as this midseason tournament's going to try and do. So I think that all worked. It's working as they intended. We have another super chat from Joseph Baker, who is the first super chat he's ever done. So let's celebrate that. Wow. Is there a way to celebrate more than that? Oh, no. It just has a nice little thing out here. Do you think that Kawhi should retire? Ooh, that's a spicy meatball. What do you think?
I don't think so.
I mean, he was an MVP level player when he was healthy this year. And I mean, literally carrying that team at times and looked as good as he had looked. Wait, what was the last injury he had? Didn't he have one at the end?
I think he had an MCL, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong, though. Yeah. Something with his knee.
So, again, another reason why Joseph would be asking that, and probably a really good point, because, you know, he just keeps breaking down and it's heartbreaking, really. It's interesting. I suppose give it one last shot. If he can't make it through next year and play, you know, 65 games with some load management, then I would probably hang it up after next year.
Yeah, I actually had them coming out the West with a healthy Paul George and Kawhi, but that never came to fruition.
You can say that again, but don't. the interesting thing, because you kind of knew what you were getting with Kawhi. I mean, before they signed him, they knew that that was going to be a very distinct possibility, right? That he wouldn't be healthy enough. And Paul George too has health issues that he battles. So those are the two players that, you know, could get you a championship, but also could keep you forever, pining and never quite get there. It's too bad. And they're two of the, you know, the nicest guys in the world as well. So, and hardest working, they just can't, put it all together without breaking down. It's too bad.
Podcast P, pretty good podcaster, I have to say. I've been tuning into a few clips. Yeah, he's good. We need to get him on the live show.
We might be able to do that if I see him. Okay. So I see a question over here. They want to know if I saw the movie Air, which came out on Amazon Prime.
I did. I saw it in the theater with my mother. It was great.
Well, you know, what's funny. I was going to go see it and then it just didn't happen. And all of a sudden it was on TV. So we watched it the other night. And I'm glad. I'm kind of glad I didn't go to the theater to see it. It was fun to kind of relive all of that. I was also frustrated because I don't think it was accurate enough for me. And the music was great. That certainly was another good part of it. But I think the crux of the matter is, and I as a coach, I should have loved what the scene where Matt Damon explains why he realized that Michael Jordan was Michael Jordan. And it had to do with, we don't have to like ruin it, but what it had to do with the shot he hit for against Georgetown for North Carolina in the NCAA tournament in the finals that won the title for them as a freshman. And I liked that insight. I hadn't really pondered it that much in terms of what he said. And I think that it seems right enough to me. But that's not what made him so magnetic. That's not why they realized this guy was going to be a big star or bigger than anybody else. That's what's frustrating. And they never really touched upon that, if you know what I mean. Does that make sense?
Explain.
Okay. I grew up in Chicago. I was there at ground zero for his rookie year. And by the way, before that, in the Olympics, when he played against NBA players in their training sessions and destroyed them. So the word coming out from those workouts, when they had NBA, they didn't have like the best NBA players, but they had good NBA players come out to work the Olympic team out. Remember back then it was all college players. Bobby Knight was the coach. And he destroyed them. I mean, nobody can handle them. So they already kind of had a sense of what was going on then in the summer. But it was his smile. It was his magnetic personality. It was – and just the fact that he could fly. His highlights at North Carolina are just some of the most outrageous things you're going to see of athletic ability. And his movement pattern was so unique compared to almost anybody else before or since. So that is what I think, we gravitated towards. Not like this little nugget out, Dean Smith recognized that he was a really great basketball player. He transcended the actual playing part of the game. And I don't think that they touched upon that. And I think they didn't want to because the conceit was you weren't going to have Michael in the movie. And so they didn't want to like show him. And I was just sort of mystified by that for the whole movie.
I think there was a few things in there that weren't exactly like all the way true, but it is a movie at the end of the day, right? They're just trying to, make it smooth.
Yeah. So anyhow, but I did enjoy it. And it was also fun to hear like, wait, that's how they got Just Do It. Like, you find out in theory where they got that. And by the way, I got to remember, I know by college Just Do It was there, but I can't remember Just Do It in 1984. But it might be worth looking up. But either way, it was a great line. It's worth fudging that to make it happen there. And then some of the outfits that they had Ben Affleck in as Phil Knight was hilarious. And those were probably pretty accurate. The colors and the design, some of the stuff that they were thinking out back then. I don't know what they were doing. But okay, do we want to get back at all with the or I guess we could talk about the next series for a few minutes. What do you think?
Yeah, let's do that.
So we got Miami, we got Boston, East Coast. What are your thoughts?
I think, the injuries that the Heat have will inevitably catch up to them. And I just think they're at such a talent deficit, even though I think they have the best coaching staff in the league. And Jimmy Butler plays like a top five NBA player. I think it's just going to be too much on his back for them to overcome this Boston Celtics team. Even though it'd be a great story to see it happen. And I love their coaching staff, and I think they're the best coaching staff in the league, but I don't see it happening.
So because of the coaching staff and the preparation, they'll probably just lose in six.
Yeah, something like that. I would assume so, yeah.
Yeah, I in my mind, thinking about Butler and how he's how he performs in their offense, they could sick, Jaylen Brown on him. They could put Marcus Smart on him. And I feel like, eventually they could get him to be less efficient than he's been. And it's probably all they need at this point.
And Tatum and Horford are like roaming, Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. I think Horford should be able to handle, Adebayo, even though Adebayo is really quick in compared to Embiid. But I always underestimate Horford's ability to move, and the next thing he's blocking him. Here's what's funny. I was looking at the stats of Embiid against Horford down low, because they go to Embiid in game seven, right at the end of the game. And normally I'd be like, great, go down low, go get whatever matchup you have. But when you look at it's not that accurate, but on the NBA site, they have matchups, Embiid versus Horford, Embiid versus everybody else. And they said he shot 31% against Horford when Horford was guarding him. Now, they also only gave Horford one block. I know that he blocked Embiid four times in the series, I think, at least. So that's why you don't know how accurate it is. But another thing about Doc, it's like, okay, if I would have already felt before that possession, which was like one of the last possessions in the game seven, I probably would hesitate to have galled that and said, I'm not going down to, with Embiid against Horford. And so anyway, and to translate that, so Horford, again, he's mobile. I think he can handle that. And the big question then is, do they start Williams again, or do they go back to their normal Derek White starting five? What do you think?
I think they go back. I think they go back. But, they'll probably try different things. That was actually a great adjustment. That was a big difference maker in the series, I think.
But it didn't work in the very beginning of game six. They went on a run. And then in game seven, the Sixers went on a big run. They had control of the game for a while.
Well, it was also nice for him to see – just nice to see him make that big of an adjustment. And we talked about this before. Like, just sometimes when you throw a different look, it doesn't matter how good that look is.
Yeah.
Right. It definitely changed some things for them defensively. And, a lot of teams wouldn't try that because they just feel like they can't play with two bigs anymore.
Right. And I hear you. And I've always been convinced someone could do it. And, there you go. I got to actually check. I don't even know if they did that much better, like on the offensive boards, because that's be where I would look to and think, that's where you're going to be able to get some extra threes out of that when you get extra possessions. But I can, if only we could check that.
You know, I, And I was talking about how much, you know, Embiid and Harden struggled. And part of it was that the length that they added around the rim, Harden wasn't getting to the rim as much, less floaters. And we saw how Embiid played. So it worked on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, it worked on them. And again, Harden was the key. When Harden did really, really well, pretty much, they would win that game. And if they didn't do so well, then they would lose. So, yes.
One of them was when Embiid wasn't even there, right? So,
right, exactly. And that's the one that Harden just destroyed him. And then he just sort of went away from the mid-range stuff. It seemed like the best way that Harden could win those games was the mid-range. And, you know, he kind of went away from that, or he got lost and just kept – was much quicker to pass the ball. So, in theory, I got to study that one more time to look at there was a wall in front of Harden a lot of the time in that game seven, and he was just giving the ball up because, you know, that's what he was – you know, there wasn't anywhere to go. I got to make sure that was Williams. I'm sure it was. Now, Matej asks why, you know, Nuggets video. Sometimes with all the games going on, and I got to pick and choose which are the better games, they somehow slip through. I did one from one of their series, and it didn't do well. And don't worry, I should break down all the games in the Western Conference Finals at the very least, and I think they're going to make it to the finals, so you'll have all the Nuggets break
you
down.
You know what? AD versus Jokic video would be good for this game.
Focus, because
that was like the thing I really wanted to see, because obviously with Aiden, I feel like Aiden was he almost liked Jokic too much. Like, he reveres Jokic. Like, he's almost scared of Jokic. Like, he wants to see Jokic do good. Like, that's like the vibes I get. And I know it wouldn't be quite, I know people don't look at AD as the toughest guy in the world, but I knew AD would definitely throw Jokic different look defensively, right? Like, he's a way better defensive player. But the thing with Jokic is that he doesn't play against his opponent. He plays against the game of basketball, and all the great players do.
That's good. That's very good. Yeah, you know, it's funny because it looked in the beginning like AD was going to just have a miserable night. Jokic blocked one of his reverses, and it was such a weak attempt by AD. I was like, oh, this is not going to go well. AD had a bit of a quiet 40-point night, too, for a minute. Like, at some point when he had 26 points in the third quarter, I was like – and I went through it in my head. I'm like, oh, you know what? Yeah, I can see that. Again, it wasn't that effectual. They were still down by a lot, but I could. He wasn't so quiet. But it wasn't like he was hurting Jokic so much on those. Whereas on the other end, I kept seeing like he just would fall asleep for half a beat. He just wasn't on point. He wasn't ready against a guy that you have to be in a stance, ready to move at every single moment. You can't really relax. And that's what happened across the board for the Lakers. It was very strange to see so much relaxing on defense in that first half. Now, if they don't do that in the second game, they don't relax, then do the Nuggets get the huge lead again and that whole thing? I don't know. I mean, my impression, at least from that beginning, it was that the Nuggets looked so good that, yeah, you felt like this could be a sweep. They look
like this is going to be a long series.
You think it's going to be a long series?
I do.
Yeah. I you know, it's funny. I feel like both teams kind of match up sort of well to each other. But again, it's all on Darvin Ham to figure out the right lineups based on who's out there for the Nuggets. He's going to have to react to the Nuggets. I don't think he's going to be able to dictate much. The one place they get to dictate, though, is LeBron hands in the ball, and he gets to choose who he wants to isolate on defense with the pick and roll. And that was Murray. And that didn't go well in the second half. So, you know, the ball is now in Mike Malone's court, and he could, you'll see them pre-switch that and get someone else out there. Like, if it's Gordon, they're going to want anybody. Well, who else? But by the way, Michael Porter Jr. would be another, probably a good target for LeBron too. They have two guys there KCP I like, and he certainly knows LeBron's game very well, but again, he's smaller. So that's interesting now that I'm thinking about it in that context. I think LeBron has his pick now of who he wants to be able to isolate on. And I don't know what Denver's going to do short of maybe like some zone stuff. I can't even picture them playing zone though. Can you?
Every team could throw a zone in there, I think. Why not? But I would say that, like, yeah, you want Aaron Gordon on LeBron for the most part.
Yeah, but then LeBron can just easily change that if he wants to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's interesting. Let me get to Denver. I'm going to look.
Or they could... why do you feel like he could change that every time? Aaron Gordon could just go under.
Oh, so now you're the guy with the good ideas, huh? Yeah, okay, you're right. He can go under. Because you certainly wouldn't mind him shooting threes, even though he made how many did he make that?
One of them actually looked like a real struggle where they, I don't know if they went under, but he found
him. Make one. He was 0-for-4. You know what's weird? I almost saw, I remember him making one.
So what was your initial point why you feel like they couldn't keep Aaron Gordon on him?
Well, because he'll just call whoever he wants up and then, you know, they'll screen and they'll switch.
Oh, you think they'll switch every time?
That's what was happening.
So, yeah. Fair. But I think you could go under with him. For now.
Yeah, I'm going to text Coach Malone that. That's good.
I think Coach Malone is great. Great coach.
Yeah, he's really a great coach. I mean, I think he doesn't get a lot of props, and he deserves.
It's Denver. I mean, look, the same thing happened with Jokic all year. Like, Jokic isn't the MVP. Who would have thought? I don't know. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, but it's, you know, I don't know if it's because he's quiet, Jokic. I think it's just because of the fatigue, you know. No one wanted to give him three in a row and whatever. And
Why?
Because, you know, it's
why? It's like to me, maybe I'm too scientific with it and not enough nuanced or artistic with it. But like, if you're the most valuable player for that year, you should win the MVP that year, no matter how many.
Well, now we got to discuss what the most valuable player means.
It's some kind of time capsule, I guess, for people.
Yeah, but it's also like, is it the best player in the league? Is it the best player in your team? Is it the most valuable in your team? Is it, you know, I don't know what it means.
Well, fair.
So that's the problem. But I love that Mark Jackson got absolutely roasted for not putting him in the top five of his choices. Did you see his response?
He made a mistake, he said, or he forgot?
Well, he said that he picked one from each position, which I think is ludicrous, but it's true. You know, I think he said he did Embiid. I know Donovan Mitchell was number five. And then, you know, I think he was right in terms of positions. You know, that is not how that should happen, though. And he even said, if you want to take away my vote, you can take away my vote. And I thought that was, you know, that was an appropriate answer for him.
I want to see what Jokic said to AD after that crazy shot with a step back at the buzzer. He said something. They said they were talking to each other. That's pretty funny. And Jokic had a little shrug.
What I want to know is what Austin Reeves said to Jokic after he pushed him down.
Jokic did flop. He did flop. But
he pushed me. You know, he pushed
did, no, it was a it was a foul. Two things could be true, right?
Yeah. He definitely went down harder. So, and I like they tried to pick him up. And if you look carefully, I'm pretty sure Jokic refused. He's like, you're not helping me up. And but then they had a nice little chat about it. It was funny just to see that. There's probably a lot of interesting stuff that they might have on some hot mic somewhere. I think we've covered whatever we needed to cover tonight.
Yeah, I thought it was a great show.
Yeah, I mean, it's late for you, so I don't want you to, you know, have to stay up too late. But, I think we're ready to go. So, you know, I'm going to be back here tomorrow, I believe. So if you can stay up, it's the same time.
Let's do it.
All right, take a nap in the day, and we'll be back. So please be ready to watch the Doc Rivers thing. I would love it if you watched it. It's going to be really good, really compelling, really unique. And it will probably not be that kind of doc, but it will be, you know, I'll just give you the, how I see it and then the video evidence. And, I think it'll be illuminating, for him. And, you know, remember he jumped from, LA to Philly, like so fast in a way that, like, you know, he just needed to get a job. I think maybe he was worried he wasn't going to get hired again or something. And that happens when you get to a certain age anyway, although he's nowhere near there. He's probably what, like 60.
Yeah.
So, and he's also a Chicago guard, so I should have some, simpatico with him. But the bottom line is, I've always had that issue, and it's in the back of my mind about him. Certainly, you watch the defenses play before Thibodeau got there. Thibodeau really, really changed that the defense for the good. He really needed that, and he had like really good assistants. So at any rate, so stay tuned for that, please. And then I'll try and figure out if I can kind of jam out the Lakers Nuggets maybe before the game. I don't know. I'm crazy, but I think I can, if I get up early enough, I can do it. So please be there for all those things. And then maybe I'll do two videos in one day. What do you think?
You should do it, Coach. How many hours of sleep are you going to get?
I don't know. I mean, I'll probably try and, you know, I don't know. Actually, it's not too late. I can work right now. We'll see. I'll try and get a decent night of sleep. I hadn't gotten one in about a week straight. I had gotten, you know, Had not hit my.
What's not decent? How many hours? Like what's bet? Like
my goal is 7 hours, and I had a 35% sleep deficit for a week where I wasn't closing any of my rings. And I was
like 5 hours a night, 6 hours a night.
Yeah, it's probably like, you know, maybe a little less around or five tops. And it wasn't deep sleep, you know how it measures your heart rate.
Yeah.
So I was a mess. I was really, having trouble gripping reality. So don't do that, folks. Make sure you get, you know, use the sleep that you need. And, but I'll get back to it, fresh. And I think it'll be really good. So that would be crazy if I did a doc video. Somehow I get the Jokic versus AD video out, and then a live show.
That Jokic versus AD video. That's the one I want to see, Coach Nick. I'm excited.
No.
Do both, but that's something I would want to see from you.
No. I mean, but just focus on those two.
Yes, I think that'd be.
By the way, that makes it much easier for me if I can just focus on the buckets they did. And by the way, but here's the thing: it's not just that for Jokic; it's the 14 assists that he threw.
They both had great games. I mean, and that's something I really wanted to see coming into the series. So I think it'd be interesting.
Right. And by the way, you know, that's another interesting point. Anthony Davis gets 40 points and 3 assists. Jokic gets 34 points and 21 rebounds, by the way. Jokic had 18 assists. And you know that he threw X amount for threes. So it's not just an extra 28 points. Let's call it like 33 points. So he actually, you know, generated like 60 some points compared to Anthony Davis, which is, you know, probably the difference there and what that sort of led to the big lead. So it's a fascinating series. I agree. I think it'll go 6 games, but I think the Lakers run might end there.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks so much, everybody, for being out there. Thanks for the super chatters, Braun, Nick, the Streeter Buzzing, Martin Jose, Joseph Baker. All you guys are so generous. Thanks for being here. Everybody else in the chat, awesome stuff. Great conversation as always. And with Combo, I always look forward to it. So we'll get you back tomorrow and we'll keep going.
Most definitely. Let's keep it going. Keep it going. Keep it going.
All right. All right. And don't forget, sports fans at B-Ball Breakdown, we're not a channel. We're a conversation. You in? Are you in, Combo?
Yes, sir.